This podcast features criminologists discussing sensitive themes and topics. Listener discretion is advised.
A young Canadian girl goes missing. Did she leave on her own accord, or was she taken? This is the Michaela Bally story. Megan.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. So good to see you as always. We got to spend some time together a couple days ago, so I'm still glowing from that.
I know. It was such a fun day. Day, night. I love our sleepovers. It was great. I had such a nice time. You're such a good hostess.
Thank you.
Even your kids were great little hosts, so I had a really fun sleepover. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome anytime. You know that. Megan, this is one of those cases that has been requested by a lot of our listeners. And I have to be honest, it was on my list and I would look at it and then I would kind of pick something else. And we haven't really covered, or I haven't covered a case like this in a while. And I tend to shy away from these types of cases. So I was trying to do some, you know, soul searching to try to understand, like, what is it about these cases that I can't handle? And I think it's because while missing persons cases are so incredibly important, I find these really difficult because as my kids are getting older, they're scary. And I really can't think of anything worse as a parent.
Yeah.
And in the case we're talking about, it was a young woman who it's been almost 8 years to the day that she was last seen. And her loved ones are still hopeful. The investigation is still very active. And what we know from doing these episodes is that there's always some hope, especially if the case remains open and we continue to talk about these cases.
100% agree.
So we must continue to keep Michaela's story circulating. Mm-hmm. So we encourage our listeners and our viewers to please share this story as much as you can. The more people that hear the story, hopefully, the more interest in the case, the more tips, and the more likely we could bring Michaela home. Michaela Margaret Kim Niebergall was born on July 2nd, 1999 in Regina. So I want to pause for a minute here, Megan. I did say Regina, not Regina. A lot of Americans incorrectly say the name Regina. Now, we don't ever laugh or joke in our episodes, but I am a bit immature, so saying Regina did cause me to giggle a little when I was doing it. But just for one quick giggle before we get into the really serious stuff, the city of Regina recently faced a lot of criticism because they launched a tourism campaign using the slogan, "Show us your Regina."
Oh, okay. Well, that's one way to get attention.
Okay. And then they also, their other slogan was, "The city that rhymes with fun." So as you could imagine, many people were not happy because they said it sexualized the city and it was done in poor taste.
Okay.
So I just wanted to, you know, sometimes we want to throw in things that make us giggle a little because this stuff is hard to research. And I wanted to just share that with you.
I'm glad you got out in front of that now. Okay, we can put it behind us.
And that is no longer their slogan, though, in case you're wondering.
I think that's a wise choice.
Anyway, Regina is in Saskatchewan, Canada, which is the western part of Canada. Now, 7 months before Michaela disappeared, she had changed her name to Michaela Bally. So that's what we'll refer to her as for the rest of this episode.
Okay.
And her mother's name is Paula Marie Bally. So that's probably why she changed to that last name. Now, her mother, Paula, works as a consultant, or actually, I'm going to say worked as a consultant because I'm not sure if she still does. At the time of the events we were discussing, she worked as a consultant for the Ministry of Social Services of the Government of Saskatchewan. Now, there's no record of who Michaela's father was, and I don't believe that she ever knew him. Michaela did have a really loving, big family, though. In fact, she lived with her mother, her aunt, her maternal grandmother, and her two younger siblings, and the family resided in Yorkton, which is a city in Saskatchewan, Canada. Michaela was described as a nice, shy girl with many friends. She had a pleasant demeanor. She played the violin. She was involved in drama club at school. Kind of just your normal, average teenager. She did experience some bullying, as everyone does at some point in their lives. Hopefully not as much today, but certainly when I was growing up, there was a lot more bullying than we see today. But Michaela was bullied for having some acne. And she did experience some tough times at school because of that. Now, there were also a few reports that Michaela performed some self-harm, and this could be due to the bullying. But at the time of the events we were discussing, she had gotten better and wasn't known to be self-harming anymore. That had happened a couple of years prior. Now, she was a happy girl at this point. She was in 11th grade. She'd wanted to be either a vet or a teacher. But unfortunately, neither of those dreams would become a reality, as in the spring of 2016, Michaela Bali vanished into thin air. On April 12, 2016, Michaela's grandmother dropped her off at her school, Sacred Heart, which was at about 8:20 a.m. And this was the normal routine. Her grandmother was always the one to drive her to school because her mother would go to work earlier. And her grandmother would often pick her up as well. However, on this day, when her grandmother arrived to the school around 3:40 to pick up Michaela and take her to her violin lessons, Michaela was not at the school and no one knew where she was. So at first, no one was really concerned because they thought perhaps Michaela had headed to the lesson herself. But then when they went to the place where the lessons were held, she was not there either. And that's when panic really set in for the family.
Sorry, Amy, what year did you say this was?
Megan, this was in 2016.
So they're going to have some surveillance as well from the school eventually, I imagine. Okay.
Yeah, surveillance will come into play here as well as cell phone records.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're absolutely right. This is a more recent case.
Okay.
You know, it actually, as I said, it was 8 years to the day almost that Michaela was
last seen. Okay.
So by around 4 p.m., without any word from Michaela, the family called the police and officially reported her missing. And she's a minor, so an investigation began immediately. And since this was 2016, one of the first things that the detectives wanted to do was to get a hold of Michaela's cell phone records. But unfortunately, the police would have a difficult time doing this, because although Michaela had clearly used her phone extensively throughout the day, as we'll discuss in a moment, no phone calls were registered by her cell phone provider at all. And she is believed to have used some social media apps to communicate. So, you know, of course, it's possible that these apps were third party and they weren't showing up maybe on the phone, but I think it's more likely that there was possibly another phone in her possession. Maybe she had a burner phone.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And so the police had a difficult time because they were also trying to obtain records from these third party app companies, and it was proving to be pretty difficult. A lot of these companies were American companies, and we're in Canada here.
Okay.
But luckily for the investigation, Michaela was captured by a ton of CCTV footage. So first we see her being dropped off by her grandmother at the school. And then let's break it down a little bit about what else happens during the course of this day. So a few minutes after Michaela's grandmother pulled away, the school's video surveillance showed Michaela leaving Sacred Heart High School out the back doors. But first she stopped at her locker to put away a binder. As we'll come to find out later, the police said that the binder had, quote, nothing of significance.
Probably just dropping her books before she leaves.
Yes. Shortly after, surveillance spotted her entering a nearby pawn shop. And so police went to talk to the owner. And the owner told them that Michaela had come in and inquired about selling a silver ring. The owner of the pawn shop said he was not interested in buying the ring and had told her it wasn't really worth anything, so it wasn't worth his time. He said that she seemed, you know, normal, not in distress, just a normal teenage girl.
Okay.
From the pawn shop, CCTV showed Michaela entering a TD Bank around 9 a.m. Here she spoke to a teller. She then took out $55 from an ATM machine.
Okay.
Now, this seems like a little bit of a random amount because I could be wrong, Megan, but in 2016, in my recollection, it was common to take out money in 20s, like 20, 40, 60.
Yeah.
I know recently, like now, if I go to TD Bank, I can take out in fives, but I don't remember back then being able to do that.
Well, it's also Canada. We don't know what their systems are like as well.
That's very true.
It's a random number, but might have been all she had.
Yeah,
as well.
So it lead me, first it had me thinking that maybe she needed this exact amount for something, or again, perhaps this was all she had in that account in order to avoid an overdraft fee. That was the most she could take, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, next Michaela was off to Tim Hortons, which is a coffee shop.
Yep.
Here she got a coffee and sat by herself in a booth. At one point, she left the coffee shop, but then returned about a half hour later, unclear where she was during this half hour. And in the footage, she seems to keep looking up at the door.
Yeah.
And she also seems to be playing around with her cell phone.
Mm.
So it almost felt like she was waiting for someone.
I was just going to say that. It sounds like she is.
We can't know for sure, but it sounds like she was waiting for someone. Looking at her phone, did they text me yet? Maybe texting someone, looking up at the door, looking around. Now, we're going to be posting the Tim Hortons surveillance video on our YouTube channel. So our listeners can check them out there. So you can see Michaela, and then you can also get a feel for, you know, what her mannerisms were like.
Okay.
And in these videos, you can clearly see that Michaela was carrying an overstuffed backpack. Now, the reason this is somewhat interesting is because her family and friends would say that she didn't carry a backpack to school. She carried more of like a messenger bag or a pocketbook and would hold her books. So maybe this is more of a travel bag, some would start thinking.
Sounds like it.
Now, this is where things get even more strange, Megan, because while sitting at the coffee shop, Michaela texted a friend the phrase, "I need help." And then about 20 minutes later, she sent another text to the same friend stating, quote, "Never mind, I figured it out." Now, unfortunately, this particular friend had left her phone home that day, so she did not get this text until much later.
Yeah, this could be innocuous, too.
Yeah, like, Megan, I'm sure, you know, I'm a little bit of an extreme person. I'm a little dramatic. Like, I'm sure I texted you sometimes like, "Ugh, I need help," because maybe I'm ruminating on something, or maybe I can't, you know, I can't stop watching some show. So I'm like, "Ugh, I need help, Megan," right? Some people say that very, very flippant, right?
Yeah, this is not a maybe. You do actually send me texts like that. So yes.
Okay, fine. Or maybe she was having trouble figuring out something maybe insignificant, right? Like a function on an app.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Right, or something like that. Okay. At one point, it does look as if Michaela is taking apart her phone and then putting it back together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is it possible that this text was innocuous? Maybe it was about a problem with her phone. But I don't know much about technology, but I don't believe that with iPhones, you can like take out a battery. Remember the old school flip phones? I used to take the battery out. You would like blow on it if you didn't feel like it was working correctly.
I never did that. I don't know anything about phones. I would never open a phone.
Okay.
But I getcha.
Okay. But either way, iPhones, like 2016, I'm thinking maybe she could have been like taking off a case. Maybe she was fidgeting with something. I'm not sure. You know, you could look at the video yourself and see what you make of it.
We can speculate all day about this. So
yeah.
Gotcha.
And many people have, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Michaela was also seen talking to a woman who was sitting nearby to her in the Tim Hortons.
Okay.
Now, there isn't audio, but they were able to locate and interview the woman who was seen in the video. Mm. And what she says to the woman is kind of strange. I will say, before I tell you that, Michaela does look pretty calm to me as she's doing all these things, but I don't know her. I don't know what her normal demeanor is. Right. So it's hard to say for certain if she was calm or this was just a normal way of acting.
Mm-hmm.
And when she leaves the Tim Hortons a little before 11 a.m., Michaela used the back door. Remember, at school, she also used the back door. So just something else interesting.
Okay.
Then there is another CCTV video that shows her walking around the area almost like somewhat aimlessly. Maybe she's trying to kill time.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, in these clips, she's almost always talking on the cell phone. As I said before, investigators have no idea who she was talking to because they had no phone records of who she was on the phone with.
Right.
Now, is it possible that the phone she was using in these videos was not the one attached to her phone records? Yes, of course that's possible.
Yeah.
Or again, could it have been third-party apps? You know, people talk on WhatsApp.
Yes.
And other apps as well.
Yep.
Then Michaela texted a friend around 11:30 saying, "I'll see you at lunch." So this leads us to believe she plans on going back to school.
Yes,
right?
Sounds like it.
Michaela is then seen around 11:55 back at her school. And here she had a brief encounter with two of her friends. And she allegedly told them that she was going to be taking a bus to her hometown of Regina. She then left the school a few minutes later, sometime around like 12:02, 12:03. So she was at school a very short amount of time. And it makes me wonder, like, what was her purpose in going back to school? Just to tell these people that she was planning on leaving? It's unclear.
When you say a bus back to her hometown, you just mean where she's from. Like, normally her grandmother would drive her, but she's just getting on a bus instead.
No, I'm sorry. So she currently lives in Yorkton, and that's about 2 hours away from Regina. And she grew up in Regina.
Oh, okay. I think I missed that part.
I'm sorry.
So,
I didn't make that clear. Yep.
That's all right. So she's telling friends that she's going to hop a bus, like a 2-hour ride by herself. Did she say what the purpose was?
She didn't say purpose, if okay. She was planning on going with anyone.
Okay.
You know, again, there's more CCTV videos, though. And to my eyes, it kind of looks like she's walking with a purpose as she leaves. But again, that might be her normal gait.
Well, she was also headed towards a bus stop, so there might have been a schedule. So maybe her purpose was getting on the bus at a certain time.
Well, I'll have that answer to your question in just a minute.
Oh, okay. Great.
So then she's seen again around 12:15 to 1 o'clock p.m. She was having a meal at the Trail Stop restaurant, which is in the bus depot building. Now, an employee of the bus depot told police that Michaela had approached the ticket counter and asked what time the bus to Regina was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And when the attendant told her the next bus wouldn't be until 5 p.m., Michaela did not buy a ticket and walked off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The last known footage of Michaela shows her leaving the bus station at 1:45 p.m. before vanishing from cameras and other digital devices. So what happened to Michaela? Did she just walk away from her life at age 16? Did somebody pick her up? Was something more sinister going on here?
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those missing person cases. It somewhat reminded me of the Maura Murray case. We never covered it, but our good friends did over at Crawl Space.
Yes.
When they did a whole podcast on her. And
yes.
That's one of those missing, you know, similar to this case, things just don't seem to add up. And we have so much information, but somehow not enough information at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, police started talking to Michaela's friends, and it became clear that something had been a bit off in the days leading up to her disappearance. In fact, a week before she vanished, Michaela had mentioned several places that she wanted to visit. And this didn't seem like a red flag to anyone. You know, this is just a teenager who's discussing her travel desires or her vacation plans.
Were there any known problems in the home?
No. By all accounts, she had a really good relationship with everyone in her family. But again, we never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Of course, I just want to know if they were reported.
Yeah, there's been zero reports.
Boyfriends, girlfriends.
We'll get there.
Okay.
One friend also reported that about a month before she disappeared, Michaela had told them that she had $5,000 in her bank account. And then she had sent a message to a friend asking for a ride to a local TD Bank. She had also communicated with TD Bank several times, and she wired $25 to her account. Now, the interesting thing here, Megan, is that the police later confirmed that Michaela never had $5,000 in her account. In mm-hmm. fact, it was much, much less.
Yeah.
So was Michaela expecting this? Was she just lying to people and trying to show off something she didn't have?
Could have been expecting it from someone else who promised to put that money in to help her leave and help her facilitate a trip.
Megan, save it for the theory part.
Okay.
Because
all right. Gotcha. I'll be quiet. Okay.
Michaela also sent messages to other friends around this time saying she was unhappy about something. Some people she was saying she needed help with something. And this was all happening in the weeks and days leading up to her disappearance. But again, nothing was really a red flag. It was just like after the fact. In hindsight, we can look at some of these
sure.
things and say, why didn't someone say something?
Right.
But at the time, it didn't seem like anything.
Right.
On April 11th, the day before she vanished, Michaela had sent a text message to a friend asking for a ride to the bank for the next day. She also said it was really important. Now, on the same evening, she called TD Bank customer service three times, and she also checked her account balance. And that was the same time that she had wired over the $25.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the $25 made the $55 that she ended up taking out the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's possible that maybe she only had $30.
Okay.
Now, it also came to light that the very morning that she disappeared, she texted a friend at 6:40 a.m., again, asking if they could take her to the bank. But the friend had responded that the bank simply isn't open that early.
The money is significant here. The money is key. Okay.
I agree. I mean, I think this lends credibility to the idea that she was planning something because she
yeah.
was inquiring about her finances
yeah.
quite a bit prior to her disappearance. So
right.
it seems like she's planning for something in which she needs money for.
Sure.
There's also a high probability that she was planning to go somewhere specific. As Michaela's friend said that the day before she disappeared, she talked a lot about going somewhere. She talked about maybe going to Moose Jaw or Prince Albert, which were two areas that were nearby. Others recalled her saying she was going to Regina for vacation with her family. And then some had said that they thought maybe she'd also said she was going to Saskatoon, another area in Canada.
I assume that the police interviewed people in Regina, any connections that she might still have, to see if she was visiting any of them.
Yep.
Okay.
She had also exchanged some text messages with an ex-boyfriend the evening before her disappearance.
Okay.
And according to him, she was very unhappy at this time, and she told him that she was thinking about going to Regina for a couple of days. So this seems to be the place that keeps coming up the most, right?
Okay.
You had asked before if she had any relationships in her life,
mm-hmm.
and her friends would come forward about this very topic. And they let the police know that she had been talking to someone named Josh, and that she had also told a friend that there was a man named Christopher who was going to be coming to town to meet her soon.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these men are people that she was talking to online.
And no one ever met with them or spoke with them, I assume.
Well, no one prior to this, but police did track down Christopher,
okay.
and he was cleared pretty quickly. But he was able to tell police that Michaela struggled with her mental health and self-harmed on many occasions.
Okay.
And this is from, he says that Michaela had told him this information.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he was talking to her and trying to help her find religion to help her kind of deal with some of the issues that she had been feeling lately. They also located the boy Josh that I had mentioned, and he too was clear.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm under the impression that they were not yet able to access her text messages, and this was all based on what they were being told by, you know, her friends and families.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And while none of this was really evidence that could be corroborated, her friends had at least given investigators some places to start. A good question here might be like, well, why couldn't investigators corroborate any of this? Like, why would it be so hard, right? So in other words, they're getting this information from family and friends. It would make sense for them to just go to her cell phone and go to her social media apps and try to learn more about what she was doing.
Oh, you mean her records? I mean, they don't have her phone, so I assume you mean her records.
I'm sorry, yes, her records. But the problem was, Megan, there was a 10-month wait for the police to gain access to Michaela's social media accounts through U.S. companies and authorities.
A 10-month wait?
10-month wait.
Never heard such a thing.
They were able to get her cell phone records, but the problem was that she wasn't using that cell phone to talk to people, at least not on the provider. If anything, she was talking to someone through third-party apps.
Mm-hmm.
And also, her phone had been turned off around 7 a.m. the morning after she went missing. And the problem was, and I don't really understand this part, but the problem is that they say this could have been someone turning off the phone or that the phone simply died. And I would think, given how recent this investigation was, that they would have the technology to know the difference. Wouldn't you think?
I would think so, although I don't know much about cell phone technology. It seems to lend more credence to the position that she was using another phone to communicate.
Yeah, but I think what people are the most interested about is if someone turned off her phone, that's very different than if her battery died, because that's kind of two totally different paths, I believe.
Could also be that she turned off her own phone.
Well, that's exactly it. Either someone or her turned off the phone, or the phone just died, which would lend you maybe to believe more foul play because she was, like most teenagers, attached to her phone.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this doesn't help narrow the path for investigators.
It doesn't, but maybe they have more information, right? They're not releasing everything to the public.
Sure.
So maybe they know very clearly that it was turned off or it died.
Okay.
Now, the Yorkton Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the mouthful, also known as the RCPM, they took over the investigation. And from what I gather, they're similar to the FBI in the United States. So they handle federal jurisdiction matters.
Mm-hmm.
Other than interviewing friends and family, they were also appealing to the public for help. And luckily, tips did come flooding in. One lead even involved a man who claimed to be Michaela's father. But Michaela's friends had contradicting recollections of what Michaela had said about her father. Some people said that Michaela said her dad was dead. Others said that Michaela mentioned wanting to meet him but couldn't find him. But unfortunately, neither this or any of the other leads gave them any information on Michaela's whereabouts. And it came to be that this man, it was not corroborated that he was in fact Michaela's father.
All right.
As the days went on, hopes dwindled that she had just run off for a vacation. She hadn't touched her bank account. There had been no use on her cell phone or her social media accounts. And after 3 weeks of no new information, Yorkton RCMP handed Michaela Bali's file over to the General Investigations Section, also known as GIS. And they're a dedicated unit that investigates major offenses in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Now, GIS officers would spend hundreds of hours watching surveillance videos that were provided by local businesses. So they were trying to piece together Michaela's movements and get a really tight timeline. They did come across one piece of evidence that did seem promising at one point. They were told that a few months prior to her disappearance, actually on Valentine's Day, that somebody sent Michaela roses to her school, and she wouldn't tell anyone who they were from.
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to figure out that it wasn't from a local florist.
Mm-hmm.
So the flowers were ordered online, so perhaps the sender didn't live local.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, perhaps the sender was someone she had met online.
I get it.
I did read some reports that police were able to find out who the sender was, and he too was cleared. But I'm not sure of who, they never released his name or anything.
Okay.
Now, recall I mentioned that Michaela was seen on video talking to a woman in the Tim Hortons?
Yeah, I was just about to ask about her, to be honest.
Yeah, that was kind of like a cliffhanger I threw in there earlier.
Yeah, I know.
Yes. So police were able to locate her and they interviewed her. And very interestingly, the woman told them that Michaela had asked her if she could help Michaela get a hotel room.
A hotel room. Okay.
Either Michaela didn't give more information or the woman didn't give the investigators more information or the investigators are keeping it close to the chest. But as far as the public information goes, Michaela asked the woman, "Can you please help me get a hotel room?" The woman said no, and Michaela said okay, and then went back to her seat.
Okay.
Investigators, once they got this information, investigators immediately contacted all the hotels in Yorkton and connecting cities. But unfortunately, Megan, they didn't get this information until 3 months after Michaela's disappearance.
A long time.
So this is problematic.
Yeah.
I mean, also, besides the fact that so much time has gone by, so a lot of the surveillance video might not even be available, there's also a chance she wouldn't appear in any of the hotel guest registers because maybe someone else booked the room. Or maybe she used cash. Maybe she used a fake name.
Yes.
This would have been a really solid lead had they gotten it sooner.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, if police have any theories at all about what happened to Michaela, they are certainly not sharing them with the public. And I would bet that's for a good reason.
Sure.
The one thing they have confirmed is that there are no individual suspects at this point in the investigation. Luckily, though, it is still very much an active investigation. Mm-hmm. In fact, Michaela's mother, Paula, runs her own active campaign to keep her daughter's story in the spotlight.
Sure.
And I'll share information on that in the end when we talk about action items.
Okay.
Every year around the anniversary of Michaela's disappearance, there seems to be renewed information in the case and a little bit more media attention. And I expect that to be the same this year in 2024. So I'm wondering if there'll be any more tips that come out. In an effort to keep Michaela's story in the media, in May of 2022, the Homeward Bound Project unveiled two trucks that were wrapped with photos of Michaela on them. Now, I didn't know about this group, but the Homeward Bound is a coalition between the Saskatchewan RCMP and the Washington State Patrol.
Okay.
And it was started in 2005 to help find missing persons. Now, what they do is they wrap long-haul trucks with age-altered photos of missing people.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that excellent?
Yeah.
Michaela's community also holds an annual vigil near their location where she was last seen. And this is led by Paula.
Of course.
And attendees here are encouraged to wear Michaela's favorite color of blue. The vigil often includes a moment of silence and speeches by Michaela's family and friends. From last year's gathering, her mother Paula stated, quote, "We hope this vigil will not only honor Michaela's memory, but also serve as a reminder that we will never stop searching for her. We believe that someone out there knows something, and we urge anyone with information about Michaela's disappearance to come forward." Her family, friends, and community members continue to hold out hope for Michaela's safe return.
This is what you have to do if you're a family member. You have to become the leader, even if police are working it. You have to keep your loved one in the press any way you can. You can't let interest in the story dissipate.
Yeah.
So this is exactly what you need to do.
Yes, which is why we're sharing it today and hope other people will share the story.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm curious what you think, Megan. I see three possibilities here, some a little stronger than others. So I want to discuss each of them and hear what you think is most feasible given what we know.
Okay.
So I think the first and perhaps least likely scenario is that she ran away on her own volition. The reason I think this is because there's no evidence. Well, I mean, the reason why some people think that this theory holds water is because there is no evidence of foul play, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And she did tell friends that she wanted to go away.
Mm-hmm.
However, she did leave behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
She left behind her cell phone charger and she was, like I said, attached to her cell phone. But again, maybe she had a second cell phone and a second charger. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But she also left behind medication. She very religiously took medication to manage her acne. And those close to her say she would never have left that medication.
Okay.
She also left clothes. Her mom says that the family left, like, they called it like petty cash or slush fund in the home.
Right.
And she said that wasn't touched. And she felt that if Michaela was going to run off, she would have taken some of that money.
Mm, possibly. Yep.
So is it possible she was planning to go away for a short time and then come home? Or maybe she planned to die by suicide away from her family, and then maybe that's why she didn't bring her things, because she didn't think she needed her things.
I mean, there's no evidence to point to that exactly, so okay.
No, but we have to look at all possibilities.
Yep.
You know, it is possible that she left her things to throw people off her trail.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was planning on buying new things, but again, she didn't have a lot of money.
Right.
So that's why this one's a tough one for me.
Okay.
Now, theory two and three are overlapping because theory two is that she fell victim to an online predator.
Mm-hmm.
And theory three is human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm inclined to think that it's one or both of these. There's a few reasons. Number one, Michaela did live in an area that at the time was considered a major hub for this type of criminal activity, meaning sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
It was known that Michaela was very active on several social media apps, and she often used the apps to meet people, particularly boys, maybe men, depending on the age. Mm-hmm. On March 16th, 2016, just a month prior to her disappearance, Michaela wrote on her Snapchat and on one of her Instagram accounts, quote, "Looking for Snapchat friends because I have none in real life. Add me."
That's awful.
So this is almost an invitation to predators, mm-hmm. that this is someone who's vulnerable. And if you look at some of her, she had a few Instagram accounts, but some of them have a lot of quotes about being unhappy, you know, wanting someone to help her, not feeling like she belonged. And unfortunately, predators are looking for victims just like this.
Just like this. Vulnerable victims.
And it also seems strange because by all accounts, Michaela had a lot of friends, but that doesn't mean that she felt that these friendships were, you know, maybe she didn't feel strongly bonded to these friendships, mm-hmm. or maybe she wanted more friends. Maybe she was looking for attention. It's hard to know.
People will always say, oh, they seem like they had a lot of friends because they talked to people at school. You never know how deep these friendships are, if they're superficial, you know, if she had social anxiety and just couldn't, you know, there's so many explanations for why that could be.
And this is so sad, Megan, because this shows a vulnerability. And again, these types of vulnerabilities often make people targets to online predators.
Yeah.
It has been reported that investigators put substantial effort into acquiring information on her online history, mm-hmm. because that seems to be the missing piece here. Although it took them a while to get some of the records, they also face some other hurdles, apparently because of privacy laws mm-hmm. in the United States. So they were able to find out from family and friends and possibly some data that she spent a lot of time on an app called Kik. Have you ever heard of it? K-I-K?
No.
I haven't either, but I can tell you it doesn't have a great reputation. In fact, police in Canada publicly warned parents that the Kik app is used by predators to groom young women because it has fewer parental controls and it allows strangers to contact other users without any initial approval, such as agreeing to be friends. See, like, it doesn't send a friend request. It just allows people to talk to anyone.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
It is. Actually, the FBI recently reported that Kik played a role in the kidnapping and killing of a 13-year-old girl from Virginia. So
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And we can't know for sure if this is what happened, but it feels like out of all of these options, it seems like the way she was looking up, it sounds like, if I had to guess, mm-hmm. she was planning to meet someone. This person probably promised to wire her money mm-hmm. to help her get new stuff, to help her get to a bus station. Mm-hmm. And then maybe she asked her friend for help because she thought this person was backing out, or maybe she was having a change of heart. The thing that's, I think, the biggest question mark is, let's say she was supposed to meet this online predator. Is it possible that he ghosted her? And then she was met by foul play otherwise?
No.
Because remember,
like, yes, it's possible, but no, I don't think so.
Okay, so you think this person picked her up at the bus station once they found out the bus to Regina wasn't coming till 5 p.m.? Maybe she left the bus depot and that's when someone picked her up.
I do. I think this was someone skillful as well, who knew not to step into public establishments, not to be on surveillance, use a different phone or use a different line and lure her to a place that would be more private.
And can I tell you another piece of information that is going to lend credence to what you just said? Mm-hmm. There was no CCTV video at the bus depot mm-hmm.
yeah.
or inside the restaurant. And it leads many people to believe that whoever led her to that space knew that this is where the meetup would happen.
Of course, yeah. I would absolutely agree with that. I think this is someone skillful who did due diligence, does the homework, and has, of course, I would say she's not his first victim. I don't know if the abduction, I fully believe that she was probably abducted. And
you don't think she left on her own accord?
No, I don't think she left on her own accord.
You think she was planning on meeting someone, though, and then maybe she didn't realize this person was a predator?
Yes, and I don't think she was planning on leaving with this person forever. I think she was planning on a meeting for a day. She needed some money for bus fare, for food, whatever mm-hmm. it was. There might have been a promise of more money for other purposes, but I don't think this was a permanent plan to leave, as you said. I think it was mm-hmm. just a plan to meet with someone who was very smart and very skillful about luring her to the scene. But I don't know. The question mark for me would be, I'm not sure if this is someone who lured her to abduct her for a sexual assault and murder or for human trafficking purposes. I think either are equally possible, and I wouldn't be able to say. The only thing I would say that I feel really confident about is that she didn't leave on her own volition.
Yeah, I think her family holds out hope that she is still alive because of the possibility of being sold into sex trafficking. And I've heard some people talk about the Amy Lynn Bradley case when talking about this case. We covered Amy Lynn Bradley pretty early on. And that case, I still think about it often. And that's a case where a girl went missing on a cruise ship. Mm-hmm. And many people believe that she is out there and she is being held against her will. And she was sold into sex trafficking.
I covered a case, too, of a young girl, Prisma Reyes, where it was also a possibility that she was trafficked. And her family also believes that she might be out there and is hopeful that she's still alive.
It's even possible that this was like a two-man operation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this could be a whole operation. Not a two-man, but an operation, of course.
But I'm saying, like, it's possible she was catfished. The person she was talking to online was not the person she was talking to online. Sure. And then they send someone else to pick her up.
Absolutely.
And there were, you know, they asked so many people. Like, the problem is that that restaurant was pretty empty when Michaela was there. So there wasn't a lot of eyewitnesses. It was like during a weekday, a random middle of the day. There wasn't a lot of people. They did get one tip saying that they saw Michaela with a man and they described a tattoo that he had. And so everyone got really like, finally, we have something. The guy came forward that had the tattoo and said like, hey, that's me. I have that tattoo. And yes, I saw this young woman. I held the door for her at the bus station. Mm-hmm. And they were able to say he really was just a passerby. That one person happened to see her near.
Yeah.
But nobody said that they saw her get into a car or they saw her with anyone else. So it's...
Which would lead me to believe this is more skillful. And yes, possibly more than a one person operation. Because also in a lot of cases that I've covered where there's been catfishing as well, where there was one perpetrator and it was for a sexual assault, an abduction, a murder, there's evidence. There's usually a trail. They're not as smart. I mean, even if they think they're covering their tracks, people who are organized for this type of operation really cover their tracks. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. And something else interesting, as I'm talking about this, I'm having other things pop in my head. Everyone described Michaela as very shy. Everyone time and time again. But yet she went up to this random woman asking for, you know, if she can get her a hotel. Like, it just makes me wonder if, like, somebody was talking in her ear. She was talking to someone who was like, hey, you got to do this. You can do this. Yeah. I'm right here, you know? And she was being coached almost throughout this whole thing. And the fact that she had this other phone, like, that is the missing piece here.
Absolutely.
Because if we could find out who she was talking to this whole time, although it sounds like the person's so skillful, they would have been on a burner phone themselves.
Probably, yes.
I urge you all to go to the website www.bringmichaelabalihome.com. Here you can see photos and you can get more information, including her last whereabouts and age progression photos. At the time of her disappearance, Michaela Bali was wearing glasses, a teal mint infinity scarf, jeans, and a three-quarter length burgundy purple coat. At the time, she had blonde wavy hair that she was wearing down. And again, you could see this all very clearly in the video links that will be provided on our YouTube channel. If you have any information at all, you can call 306-641-9436 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS. There is currently a $100,000 reward for any information leading to Michaela's whereabouts. I would also suggest people checking out CBC's website. They're a Canadian media company, and they have comprehensive coverage on this case, which includes specific timelines and locations of Michaela's last known whereabouts. So please share this case as widely as you can. Before we head out, we just have a few supporter questions we're going to be answering. All right, Megan, you ready for these?
I'm ready.
This supporter says, I plan on doing my dissertation on a topic related to sex offenders because it's my area of interest. Which areas do you think are lacking research? I'm not current on sex offender research, so I'm not really sure where the research lies. I know there's a lot of interest in whether or not sex offenders could be rehabilitated.
Yeah.
And if so, how? While also, you know, providing public safety and restitution for the victims.
It sounds like this person is interested in victim rehabilitation, if that's what I understood from the end of it, which certainly is an area of great interest. Now, I think for a long time, the research has swung in the direction of whether or not sex offender legislation is effective. So does Megan's Law work primarily? Is civil commitment just? Is it constitutional? So that's where most of the research lies now. And I think an abundance of it. So if you're looking to move away from offender, does this work? If you're looking to move away from legislation, I'd certainly say I haven't seen very much by way of victimization. I also haven't seen how this legislation impacts victims. So there's a lot of focus on how it impacts offenders. Mm-hmm. But does it impact victims? Does it help them? What actually helps victims to be restored? Is it having an offender placed on a registry? So I would love to see more of that kind of research, the restoration of victims and what actually helps them to survive, to thrive, and to heal better.
Yeah. Good answer, Megan. All right.
Thank you.
The next one. Have you heard about the Bryce Laspisa case? If so, what is your theory? This is another one of these cases of a mysterious disappearance. I mean, this one's much more mysterious than Michaela, even, because the theories, there are a few theories in that case as well. But for those of you who don't know, Bryce was on his way to his parents' home, mm-hmm. right? Making a drive. I think it was a couple of hour drive. He called his parents and let them know he was going to be pulling over to just shut his eyes for a few minutes. And he seemingly vanished into thin air. Do you know this case much, Megan?
I know it a little bit. And I know that it's one of those very mysterious disappearances. As I recall, there were some red flags with his own actions or behaviors ahead of time. Some odd behaviors, things.
And I think he may have suffered from some mental health issues. He was trying to get help with some addiction issues that he was also having.
Yes, there were some addiction issues. And I believe there was just some reports about him giving some of his belongings away, things that could have been innocuous, but you never know given the context here.
Yeah.
I will say this one is a complete mystery for me. I don't know what happened. I don't even have, usually I have kind of a theory. Was this of his own volition? Was there foul play? In this case, I am just as baffled as the person who asked the question. I wish I had a better answer.
Yeah, part of me thought that he maybe walked off on his own. He was suffering, like something was going on with him.
Right.
Like maybe mental health wise, and he walked off, but there's no evidence. You know, they never found his body. They never found any evidence of foul play. He's seemingly, again, this is another one that's very similar to Maura Murray.
So I thought of Maura Murray with this case. Absolutely.
They're almost like, they're both similar with a car being on the side of the road and then someone vanishing.
It would seem odd to me where he was, that he would be, you know, opportunity theory. Was he apprehended by an offender at that opportune moment? You know, it seems odd, but I really don't know.
It's very possible that he was pulled over on the side of the road to, you know, shut his eyes to get a little rest and really bad timing. Someone, like you said, opportunistic. Yeah. Someone was driving by. They saw a young man alone and it was, you know, they picked him up and threw him in their car. And that's why they never found a trace of him, because maybe he was taken somewhere else.
I tend to not lean in that direction, but honestly, it's all speculation. And any answer would just be us speculating all day. On me, this would be for me. It's a great question. And I'm sorry that I don't have a better theory, but I just am baffled by this one. Big question mark.
It also reminds me of Brian Schaefer, which is another one that that's the one that he like went into a bar and he just never left. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It was called I think it was in Altoona.
You mentioned it and it sounds vaguely familiar, but
It was called the Fat Tuna Saloon or something. I remember the name and it was, I think he was a medical student and he went out with friends.
Yes, I do. Yes.
And he went in a bar and then just, no one ever saw him come out. It's so, okay, sorry. We veer off a little. Okay, and then the final question we have today, and this one, Megan, we did talk about before because this is one of my favorite questions I think we've ever received.
I know, and
I think I realized just how funny you are when I heard some of your responses to this question. Okay, this question, if your life was a movie, which one would it be?
Okay, for me, I'm going to go with Almost Famous. It's kind of,
and why do you say
become
that,
kind
Megan?
Of a joke now at this point, like, oh, am I famous yet? But it's really a joke. So Almost underlined.
Remember when we used to call each other on the podcast first drop and be like, are you famous?
That's what I'm saying. It's become such a joke that that's why I would go with that for me. Or I would also go currently with Hunger Games, because that's all I focus on is my next meal.
And you had a really good one for me. James had a really good one for me. And I had, I think, a pretty funny one. So the funniest one that you said was a series of unfortunate events, which is just
so
funny.
Fitting.
And of course, but my life is very blessed.
You are.
I'm very happy. But like just little things, right? Like just little funny things. And then James said the big sick, which is so funny because I'm quite the hypochondriac.
Quite.
A little bit of health anxiety here.
A lot of it. Okay.
And then I said, what's it called? Definitely maybe.
Because if you know Amy, you'll definitely know one maybe. Second. Oh, I'm definitely doing this. Oh, maybe. You know, I can't do it. Nope. I'm out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or this is the worst snack I've ever eaten a minute later.
This is the best thing I've ever tasted in my whole life.
Yeah. I've ever had.
Constant change.
So I'm going to stick with definitely maybe then.
It's a good one for you.
Thank you very much for the lighthearted question. But again, most importantly, you know, let's try to find some justice for Michaela Bali and her family. So I urge everyone, please check out the information that we provided. And thank you all so much for joining us today. And we will catch you next time on Women in Crime.
Women in Crime is written and hosted by Megan Sachs and Amy Schlossberg. Our producer is James Varga. Script editing is by Abigail Bel Castro. Audio editing is by Siler Burr and Jose Alfonso, and music is by Dessert Media. If you enjoy the show, please remember to follow and leave a review. You can also support the show through Patreon, where you can get access to additional ad-free content such as exclusive full-length episodes, lectures, a book club, and virtual happy hours with Megan and Amy. For more information, visit patreon.com/womenandcrime.
Sources for today's episode include bringmichaelabalihome.com, the Saskatchewan Gazette, CBC News, Saskatchewan Crime Stoppers, CTV News, Global News, and SaxToday.com.